Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Wake up! Wake up! Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Dustin comes in with some information, but I want you to do some more research. When was the last time the Cubs, the Sox, and the Bulls won a game in the same day?
Maybe. All three teams won.
All three teams won. Still working on that.
We got it. It's done.
Oh, what, we do?
When is it?
Yeah. I just told you that.
Any more brain busters?
Oh, that's right. What's the date again?
April 9th, 2022.
Okay, that's not exactly right, Dustin.
No? All right, I fixed it.
Okay. Yeah. Let's have it.
So, 2021, perfect game by Philip Umber. Remember that game, Molly?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No?
I remember
I'm
that.
I'm wrong again?
That wasn't 2021.
Come on. What's wrong with this?
What's wrong with this is we're having a meeting on the air.
No wonder I went to five schools in 5 years.
Okay.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
I am the smartest man alive!
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Good Friday morning. Going to have a lot of fun today like we did yesterday. Tried to get to the bottom of all the history. The Bulls, the Sox, and the Cubs made one day on Wednesday night. But today, more history to be made. It's game day. Bulls Heat tonight down in South Florida. Also, Miami in Chicago for the Marlins and the Cubs. Weekend series now is a little bit more interesting. Going to be a fun weekend. Oh, the White Sox, they're in Philadelphia, and the Blackhawks wrapped up their season last night. We have got a lot to talk about today. We've got a lot to get to, and it's going to be fun this morning. How are you guys doing?
Excellent.
I'm great.
Molly will be here eventually, and we will get talking about what is going on in the weekend. Want to start with, obviously, the biggest news, I think, of the day. Jimmy Butler out for the Bulls gives them an opportunity. I think there's a tendency that now all of a sudden Bulls fans are like, well, that's a path that's opened a little bit wider. That's an opportunity to advance to Sunday against the Celtics. I think that's what I thought initially too. Now I'm worried the more you look into it, now you're thinking the Heat. You don't want to give a team that plays so well with an edge a reason to band together. This Heat culture that we talk about all the time now is almost, I fear, from the Bulls' perspective, more likely to surface. Now is the time where you think Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero and all the guys. Jaime Jaquez, the rookie, is not playing like a rookie these days. And I just wonder, are the Bulls in a trap? Are they sinking into a South Florida trap going down there to play the Heat? Looks good because they have an advantage. The Heat playing without Butler. They don't have Robinson. They don't have Rozier. They don't have a chance. I think that's dangerous. I think that's really dangerous because I think the Bulls can't take anything for granted. They're a team this season that just when you start to believe in them, they disappoint you, and tonight is one of those one of those games that is set up, and I think this is just from experience, where you know you expect them to win because Butler is gone and everything's going to go well, and then they pull one of those games like they play too often this year.
And yet the Bulls are a dog tonight down in Miami, which is kind of weird. And,
Heat culture.
And David, wouldn't it be a massive disappointment if you are on the Bulls season is already a disappointment because they're playing in these games, these play-in games, and they should have been a team that was in the quote-unquote real playoffs. If you lose, you being the Bulls, lose tonight when they don't have Jimmy Butler, wouldn't that make it even worse? I mean, this is a game as a Bulls fan that I'm almost demanding that they win.
This is a must-win game for the Bulls.
It is a must-win statement game.
This is a must-win game, not just because the season ends and they won't play any more games if they lose, but I think if you are a franchise that is serious about a commitment, yeah, to winning, to doing what you have to do, they have to win tonight to take the offseason seriously and to have any kind of self-respect in looking back at this year. You can't lose to a Jimmy Butler-less Miami Heat team and think that this season was even close to being successful. It's already a debate. But tonight, if they lost, it would remove any kind of doubt. This season would be a huge disappointment.
Now, some might argue that a loss tonight would almost force Bulls management's hand to shake things up.
I don't think so, though.
Or a win tonight.
Yeah.
A win tonight would be like, hey, look, all that money sitting on the bench, both those guys potentially back on the court for us. Let's bring it all back. We could be a six seed in the East.
I don't think a win tonight dramatically affects the offseason approach. But I do think a loss tonight could.
So should fans be rooting for a loss then?
No, I don't think you ever root for a loss. Never root for a loss.
All right, I'm just asking.
I don't think you root for a loss. I don't think you want to get into that game. I think the Lakers the other night were rooting for a loss, some Lakers fans, so they could fall out of the NBA tournament and avoid the Nuggets. I understood the logic to that, but it was still not something you want to do.
But there was some talk yesterday on this station and in the newspapers and in Twitter and other places that the Bulls fans, by packing the United Center and cheering on this team, supporting this team at home the way they do, are also partially to blame, because what benefit does Bulls ownership, Bulls management have? You can't sell any more beer, you can't sell any more tickets by winning. So if the fans are going to continue to show up, why would we shake things up? Why would we do anything different?
I don't think you can ever. It happens. I know what happens. I heard the station yesterday as well. I don't think it's a good idea to blame fans for being wildly enthusiastic about something they want to happen, and it's their money. They're investing it into a night at the United Center. They're investing it into their favorite team. I don't think I want to say to that fan base, oh, you love them too much.
I agree with you. I don't think the fans are part of the problem. I was surprised to hear that, hey, fan, look in the mirror. And you're part of the problem by going to these games and supporting the team. I hate that idea.
I think it's like a partner you take advantage of. The fan, the Bulls fan, is being taken advantage of because providing entertaining dinner theater is good enough. And it's one of those things that it is frustrating to watch happen because there doesn't seem to be the urgency from ownership or the urgency from the front office to go out and make the kind of changes that makes those evenings at the United Center all the more fulfilling, that makes the seasons that you follow and that helps the Bulls lead the league in attendance year after year all the more satisfying. What's happened at the United Center, as we saw the other night, it has remained a special place on nights when the Bulls are playing for something that means something, even though the play-in game really doesn't. It's one of those things that you feel like still that place was alive, and it can be even better. There were they're falling in love with all kinds. They were there for a team that they reminded them of great Bulls teams of the past. Maybe it's nostalgia mixed in, but I'm never going to blame a fan.
No, I'm not either. I was surprised that that narrative was out there. Listen, support your team, go to the games, buy the gear. Chicago strong, if you will, right?
Well, the good news is, yeah, if they win tonight, they get two more home games because then you play against the Celtics, and even though you earn the right to be swept by the Celtics, you also earn the right to see the Bulls at the United Center two more times.
This almost reminds me of when the Cubs were down in St. Louis, David, and there was all the talk right before the trade deadline about breaking up the team if the series didn't go well, and then we had the talk-off, right? We had the Mike Talkman catch and everything, and they kept the team together, and the team kind of rallied. And really the biggest change in the offseason was that the manager, who should have gotten a lot of credit for keeping that team together, ends up getting fired because they didn't make it to the postseason. And I almost feel like this is what could happen tonight. Like, lose this game without Jimmy Butler, and this team should be dismantled as much as you can dismantle it. Win this game, and you deserve the chance to run it back because you're supposed to get Max LaVine and you're supposed to get Ball back.
I think that is probably the way the front office is thinking or will be persuaded to think. If you lose, you have no reason to keep things together outside of the reality that you're going to be pressured. I don't know if it's from the fans or the media or maybe internally, you're going to be pressured to keep DeMar DeRozan and to re-sign him. And I'm not sure that's such a terrible idea, even though he doesn't play the modern NBA game, even though that you could justify taking that money and spending it elsewhere. I just don't know if that's more likely to happen than not. You're going to probably reinvest in DeRozan, win or lose tonight, and try to build around that. I don't know what you do with LaVine. You can try to move him. There's a lot of things that could happen. You lose tonight, I think you're closer to reaching for that reset button and pushing it. If you win tonight, it does reinforce some of the things that you're doing, and you could justify a lot of things as progress. You could dress it up and disguise it as such, even though I don't know that it would be. So tonight, there's a lot riding on the outcome. Jimmy Butler won't be playing for the Heat. They're 13-9 without him. I don't think it's wise to underestimate them, and I was thinking that more after we left the show yesterday than ever. Good news for the Bulls, though. Alex Caruso, after further evaluation and several social media reports that he was not going to play, he still might not, but it looks a little bit better. Reduced swelling around the left ankle has increased the optimism. Quote, my mindset is to play until my body tells me I can't. Vintage Alex Caruso. They need him. Ayo Dosunmu and also Andre Drummond, questionable versus the Heat. They need both of those guys as long as Andre Drummond can stay out of the way of his teammates. That would be recommended tonight from big Andre Drummond. So you have the only local broadcast of the game right here on 670 The Score. Tonight, the NBA play-in tournament continues. The Bulls in the Heat pregame coverage begins at 5:45 with tip-off at 6. We're going to talk to Adam Amin, who was not part of the broadcast crew because of the reality of networks taking over during the postseason. But Adam Amin, the great Bulls play-by-play guy, will join us at 9 o'clock today to talk Bulls Heat. We'll talk Bulls Heat throughout the show. We'll get your calls when we start taking calls, and certainly during the pick six. Also, we've got Ron Coomer at 8 o'clock. Dan Pompey, 7:25, going to talk about the NFL and the NFL draft. Looking forward to that conversation. But the Cubs are back in town. I got the rainout I wanted or asked for. I don't know how that happened, but I do think it benefits the Cubs. A little surprised by the decisions made because of the rainout. So weather forced the delay of the beginning of this series from last night to today. Today is a day game. That is awesome because it's a 12:45 pregame coverage with Zach, first pitch at 1:20. Doubleheader on Saturday. Doubleheader on Saturday. Javier Assad goes Saturday. Have they determined the order yet of Saturday's pitches?
They have not. And that's very interesting. I think part of it will be determined on what happens today. How long can Jameis and Taillon go? What kind of a – David, before we get into more of the storylines, let's just focus on Taillon really quick.
Okay, Jameis and Taillon pitches today, makes his season debut against A.J. Puck for the Marlins.
What do you think? 70 pitches max? 60 pitches? You know, what I'm saying is that if it goes really bad and they've got to go to the bullpen super early, then I think you'd probably go to Shota Imanaga in the first game. You've got a little bit more faith in him, but Assad's been really good too. I'm just thinking that depending on how the game goes, depending on the use of the bullpen, is how you're going to do that. And then I guess you got to look at splits. You know, how was Javier Assad last year at Wrigley Field, day game versus a night game? You know, how did that work out?
I think that's a really good way to look at it. I would look at it, number one, I would ask Shota Imanaga, when are you most comfortable pitching? This is somebody who has been their best starting pitcher so far. He deserves to be heard on something like this. And if Shota wants to go, you know, hey, it's Saturday night, the late Shota, go ahead and pitch second in the second game, the night game. But if he also has recent experience, the home opener went pretty well for him. Day baseball. Maybe he wants to pitch at noon. Whatever he wants, he gets. I think that's the way you approach it. Even though you make a good point, if you are able to get length out of your starter, and you're more likely to get that from Imanaga, maybe you pitch him in the day game, the first one, and then in the nightcap it becomes more of a bullpen session.
To give a full rest if you have to go to the bullpen too early today.
Yes.
With
every hour counts.
Every hour counts.
When you have a doubleheader and you've got four games in 3 days, every hour matters. So if you want to give your relievers, theoretically, more rest, then maybe you go with Shota in the first game, and the nightcap, as they say, you go to Javier Assad. That's not the big question to me about the weekend series. The bigger issue to me looms with the decision to minimize Ben Brown's impact on the series. They're skipping him, essentially. They're trying to give the professor another...
One more. It's kind of a nod of the cap, little sign of respect, right?
Which I understand but don't necessarily agree with.
Is part of it, though, that if need be, could you go to Ben Brown today as a follower of Jameson Taillon, where you wouldn't do that with Kyle Hendricks?
You could piggyback.
Is that part of the reason?
I am surprised to get back to like what they did to prepare for this weekend series is that they sent down Hayden Wesneski.
But I think it's only because he's got options. It's not a sign of disrespect. He hopefully isn't feeling disrespected. I expect him to be back up pretty quick. I think that's what they should do. Like last year when they told us, Tommy Hotovy told you guys, the best pitchers in our organization need to be at the big league level. So if Wesneski, don't worry about stretching him out. Don't worry about he's got to be a starter. Get his arm in the big leagues.
I think that's a good way to look at it, but I also think that they know what they're doing. Not going to get too caught up on that. I'm a little more concerned, and that's overstating it, but Ben Brown lately, the last couple spins through, has been a dependable starting pitcher. He probably gives you the best chance to do whatever you want to do on Sunday to close out this series. I understand the nod to the professor, and I understand and respect the need to get him going, because he is who he is, and Kyle Hendricks is somebody you want to give every opportunity to. But you're telling me who gives you the best chance to win Sunday's series finale, Ben Brown or Kyle Hendricks starting that game? I'm going on recent history, not nostalgia, and I'm saying Ben Brown. And the fact that he's not penciled in as one of the starters for the weekend series to me was a little bit of a disappointment, and maybe not a surprise, but it also is just – it's notable.
It's definitely notable. And it's also notable who they also brought up to come to the plate.
Yes, Patrick Wisdom
is here.
He
has been pounding the ball with the iCubs.
I mean, he's healthy.
Pounding the ball.
And your guy Miles Mastroboni will be playing left field or being the utility guy for the Iowa Cubs now, joining David Bote down there as Mr. Everything, utility guy, super utility guy. Patrick Wisdom back in the building, active for the Cubs today. They need a power bat. I hope that he, you know, is used. They'll use him wisely. I'm curious to see how Craig Council utilizes Patrick Wisdom. I wonder how he will be It's a lefty on the mound today for the Marlins. Will Patrick Wisdom get started as a DH?
Well, does he get the start as the DH, or does Garrett get the start as the DH?
You got to see what you got.
And then who's in right field? Because you're not going to have Talkman right in right field against the lefty. So is Wisdom ready to play? Are you ready to go into battle, if you will, against the Fish with Patrick Wisdom in right field? Would hear me out here, David, would it be a mistake to put Christopher Morel in right field and have Wisdom play third base in this situation?
Yeah, I think you want to keep Christopher Morel where he is.
All right.
And I think that he's actually been making some progress. Had a pretty good road trip.
Oh, his defense has gotten his defense has gotten better and his bat's gotten worse. I don't know. I'd rather have his bat hot than his glove.
His bat's going to heat up.
Okay.
I'm not worried about his bat. I'm worried about him catching ground balls and making good throws. So I think you keep him there. So Cubs and Marlins today. We're going to get Tim Anderson is back with the Marlins in town. Kind of held a mini press conference before the game was postponed. We'll hear from TA later in the show because he had a lot of interesting things to say about holding himself accountable for the disappointing year that he had with the White Sox personally and professionally. And I liked hearing him talk about the smile returning and him being mentally and physically in as good of a shape as he has been in a very long time. So Cubs Marlins this weekend at Wrigley starts today. White Sox are in Philadelphia. Garrett Crochet tonight against Spencer Turnbull. If they're going to win a game in this series against the Phillies, it's going to be tonight. I can't see the White Sox scoring more than 5 runs over the weekend. And I think tonight, if they're going to have a shot, it's going to be Crochet giving them a chance. That game is 5:40 start out in Philly, seeing what the Sox can do. Tough place for the Sox to land. Tough weekend ahead for the White Sox. The Blackhawks finished their season last night. You stayed up and watched it. I did not. I started it. Did not finish it. They lost 5-4 in overtime. Connor Bedard just did not want to stop playing hockey, so they took the Kings to overtime. That's how much he loves the sport. Could not walk away. So now we have the offseason, and I didn't realize this until I started looking at some of the reports and summaries of last night and this season, but did you realize that the Blackhawks, this was the worst season record-wise they have had in terms of points total in 50 years since 1974, 50 years they have been that bad, and it hasn't seemed like it because Connor Bedard, Kevin Korchinski, all the young talent, Jason Dickinson emerged as a pretty good option as a shutdown center. Help is on the way in Frankie Naser. Landon Slaggart had a pretty good night last night in a finale. There's hope. There's hope that exists. And so you finish the season feeling as good about a 23-53-6 season as you could possibly feel. I know that sounds absurd, but 23-53-6. 52 whopping points. The lowest total since they changed the point structure 50 years ago. So the Hawks are done. We'll continue to watch what they do this offseason. They have they're guaranteed a top 4 pick. They can still win the NHL lottery and pick first overall for Macklin Celebrini, the Boston U phenom that everybody wants. So they are done. We'll talk Bears. Talk Bears with Dan Pompey, 7:25. Very curious to see what's happening after the Bears select Caleb Williams. A lot of chatter now. Did you see what the Commanders did? Adam Peters, new general manager for the Commanders, they did a speed dating session, essentially. They invited Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, all to their facility at the same time. They did Top Golf. They did, I don't know, they probably did darts. They probably stole a page out of Ryan Poles' book. They were there at the same time to see how they would interact. They led them on tours. They had one-on-one time. Then Jaden Daniels' agent went to social media and didn't think too much of that idea. That is going to be something to follow. And then they pick second. Who are they going to take? What are the Patriots going to do at number 3? That spot is open for sale. I think then it gets interesting. How many quarterbacks will go in the top four? Will all four be quarterbacks? This is going to be the suspense that builds as we get closer to the draft, because 1 week from this morning, 1 week from now, we will be talking about the Bears taking a major step in their development, in their history, by drafting Caleb Williams and whoever they take at the number nine spot, if they indeed stay there. And I, for one, hope they do. NFL draft right around the corner. NBA playoffs continue. It's game night in South Florida, Bulls and Heat. The NHL playoffs right around the corner. We've got the Cubs and Marlins in town. We've got the White Sox in Philadelphia. We've got all kinds of things to talk about. And we've got the Pick Six next. It's Mullin Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's Pick Six with Mullin Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mullin Haw starts now.
You feel any sympathy for former Bull Jimmy Butler, who won't get to make a patented playoff improvement due to an MCL? Did he have his moment last year? What about Alex Caruso, who Woj sounded optimistic about in a tweet yesterday? Will he play?
I assume this is a trick question. I think everyone knows better than to ask if I would have any sympathy for Jimmy Butler. No, absolutely not. Not worried about Jimmy Butler's future. I really don't care if he plays in this series. No, I don't feel sorry for him. It's a break for the Bulls. It's also a trap. As we said, you cannot go into South Florida with the idea that, okay, Jimmy's not there, playoff Jimmy's gone, and the Bulls are going to take advantage and cruise. There's nothing easy about this Bulls team. There's nothing to be assumed. They make the easy look hard. They have done that too often this season to take anything for granted. The Heat still have Kevin Love. Yes, he's still there. They still have Bam. They still have Tyler Hero, who can light it up. I know he can also shoot 9 for 27, but he can light it up. And they have the Heat culture. They have Eric Spoelstra. They have every reason to think that the Bulls can't go in there and take a play-in game lightly. This is the postseason. Alex Caruso, my best guess is that he plays. As the injury report improved within hours, so last night it looked like his mindset is to play until his body tells him he can't, and the swelling around the left ankle, according to reports, not as bad. It's been reduced, so maybe that increases the optimism. I would be optimistic for the Bulls if I'm going in there. You have to think positive. You have to be wary, but you have to be positive and play with confidence. The matchup that you want to watch, DeMar DeRozan being guarded by Jaime Jaquez, the rookie. DeRozan delivered an education the first time they met back in October, I think it was. And it was Jaquez's welcome to the NBA kind of moment, and he's referenced that. And that is the one they can take advantage of tonight. So I think that, yes, you look forward to this. No sympathy for Jimmy. And the Bulls, if they can play with as much focus as they showed the other night, I think they're going to have a good night.
Zero sympathy for Jimmy Butler. Once you're out of here, you're out of here. He's not a Bull in my mind. He is a member of the Heat. I mean, I respect the fact that he played, 30 more minutes with this MCL injury, trying to get his team past the 76ers the other night, and that was a super competitive contest. Yes, Alex Caruso, I would bet, will be playing tonight. Now, how effective he will be, we'll have to wait and see. What I'm most interested in is, can Kobe White have, I mean, I don't expect 42, but, you know, can he have 30? Can he be 50% or at least or better from three-point distance? These are some of the things that I'm looking for tonight.
Who has a bigger game, Kobe White or Tyler Hero? And does the winner of that, if the answer to that is yes, whoever it is, does that team win?
Yes. Yes, I think that's a really good barometer. Absolutely.
I don't feel bad for Jimmy. I'm with Dustin and you, David. I mean, once you're not a Bull, I really don't care for you no more.
Jimmy who?
Right. Unless you're like a Chicago, a Chicagoland guy, that was the only time I really cared. But Jimmy, no, you had your time. It's over and done with. When it comes to this, I think Alex Caruso will play. And you kind of need him to kind of diffuse that Heat culture. You need players like him because, see, this is the thing with the Bulls. One thing that they do is they'll play well against good teams. And then you're hearing the news, no Jimmy Butler. You're like, okay, we got a chance. We got a chance.
Exhale.
And then next thing you know, we get blown out or something like that. And I think I saw in certain betting apps that right now Kobe, the over-under for his points is like 21.5. I'll take that in a heartbeat right now. I do agree with you guys. If Kobe, you want to stop Tyler Hero. He's the key to me. If you stop Tyler Hero, you can win this game. And you need Alex Caruso on that along with Dosunmu. And if DeRozan can really ball out in this game, they should be able to take over this game.
Well, that's a good question.
That's the voice of Ron Coomer. He joins the Mully and Haw show at 8 a.m. on Fridays with Jamison Tyone activated yesterday to start the game. Will he presumably do so today? The team made the corresponding move by sending Arizona hero Hayden Wesniewski back to Iowa. Tough, right? Are you pleased to see Patrick Wisdom back and Miles Mastroboni back at AAA Iowa?
Let's start with the pitching. I think Hayden Wesniewski, you're exactly right when you talked, Dustin, earlier in the segment about this is just going to be the way that he probably spends much of the season on the shuttle back between Des Moines and Chicago or wherever they happen to be playing, and they get him up at 1 in the morning and get him to the team on time. Did you see the other part of that? The other Brewer, the pitcher they added, they got a hold of him. They couldn't reach him either. So Marty Peavy, the AAA manager, went to the hotel desk and they had the receptionist call him and break the news and congratulate him. That's funny stuff. But the Cubs, yeah, they send Wesniewski back down. Tyone, I'm excited about his debut. Until he ruins his debut or until he looks like a guy who struggled through the first part of last year, I'm going to be hopeful that he can start this season on the right foot and the extra couple weeks that he's had to recover and now he starts. Let's hope that he is the guy they're paying him to be.
Yes, agreed. Let's hope he is that guy. You got the fish in town, the Marlins. They have not been great, to say the least, this season. You know, it's tough, right? But life's tough. Hayden Wesniewski sent back down. But again, it's because he has options. Interesting text, guys, from where did this go? The 219. Could Ben Brown be moving into a closer role this weekend?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Why?
Because I don't want the next time, and they didn't do it, the next time the Cubs have a chance to close the game, I don't think Adbert Alzolay deserves to get the ball at that point, and I don't want Drew Smyly in that role. I said to you the other day, how about Mark Leiter? But again, if you got the stuff... Again, if there are no defined roles, David, as Craig Counsell likes to say, you're an out-getter, right?
Out-getter.
Okay, Ben Brown's an out-getter. Go get an out. In the ninth, I'm fine with it. Let's see it. Why not? He's not – at this point, David, he doesn't have a spot. He's not starting. So
he should be.
You could do – I'm not disagreeing with that.
He's such a good starting pitcher. We want to make him a closer.
Well, maybe just for this weekend. Keep him sharp.
Wisniewski there, or Wisnasty.
I mean, I'm disappointed by this, honestly. I like Hayden. And I always thought, like, I think Dustin kind of mentioned it. I like him in that bullpen role. Like, I like – you need outs. And kind of tying into what Dustin's saying, I kind of do like the Ben Brown, not as a closer, but I do like maybe that bullpen role with him. And then you got Hayden in there as well. I want the young pitchers to be in the bullpen to get outs. What another name? We're talking about closers. I do like the Leiter one. That was the one I was thinking of. But here's another one. What about like Keegan Thompson? What about him?
I would rather see
I like
that.
Him.
I would rather see Keegan Thompson be auditioned as a closer in waiting than Ben Brown being viewed as such a good starting pitcher. You need to put him in the bullpen.
I want young arms coming out that bullpen just to get out. So that's just me. Also, when it comes to I like that Patrick Wisdom's back. He's been crushing it down there in the minor league. So with that being said, Miles Mastroboni, I mean, He's okay. He's just a guy to me. So him going back down to Iowa doesn't do nothing for me.
But answering Dustin's question previously, Patrick Wisdom in three seasons with the Cubs has only played 14 games in right field.
I'm just curious. I mean, Garrett Cooper's not playing right field, right?
That's true.
Michael Bush doesn't play right field, does he?
No.
And Mike Tauchman is the guy that you sit down against left-handers,
maybe,
correct?
Maybe.
Well, I mean, isn't
AJ
that
AJ Puck?
Well,
I don't know. I want to see Tauchman.
That's why I said, what about today, Christopher Morel in right field?
No.
And Wisdom at third. Because
don't you want to find like a solid position though for
yes.
Christopher Morel?
Morel's
though, like
I mean,
he's actually getting better, and then you move him, and then it's just like a setback. I feel
too much tinkering.
I'm not going to take any questions.
Will the White Sox win a game in Philly over the weekend against the Phillies? Or maybe a better question is, how many runs will they score in the three-game series? Anything you look forward to seeing as we ask our courtesy White Sox question
That's
here?
That's mean. That's really mean. Garrett Crochet pitches tonight. This is the best chance to win a game. Garrett Crochet has been very good. Doesn't have a record that reflects it. He's 1-2. Forget about the records. He's got 31 strikeouts already this season. He gives the Sox their best chance to win tonight. After tonight, I'm not sure they're going to score more than 6 runs all weekend, maybe even including tonight. That may be the weekend output. Can they score more than 6 runs in Philadelphia over the weekend? That would be a nice FanDuel prop. I don't know that they can. This offense is historically bad. Garrett Crochet, I don't think they win tonight. I think they get swept. Hate to say that, but the Sox have given us no reason to believe. 3-15, they're staring at 3-18.
Wow, David's calling for the sweep. I might make that number 10 as far as how many runs. I think you get a lot of action at 10, over under 10 in three games. So you figure three runs a game on average, and which game can they get over the top on that one? I think that would be a really fun bet, and I agree with whichever sports betting outlet wants to put that up. Maybe it's a special Mully and Haw show prop bet. Our friends at Circus Sports Illinois may want to do that. But Garrett Crochet is a reason to watch if you are a White Sox fan. But again, tonight, you're listening and watching the Bulls.
Yes.
So, like, if anything, if you're not a great sleeper, DVR the Crochet start, follow it on Twitter, get multiple devices going, whatever you got to do. But the number one event tonight are the Bulls at the Heat, at the Jimmy Butler-less Heat.
No.
This is because
Because no.
The Heat is like everybody else tonight without a Butler.
Father.
Looking at this one, and I mean, of course, they're not going to win this series, of course. But the one matchup, like you said, is the one against Garrett Crochet. That's probably your best chance. Besides that, I do like this over-under of how many runs they will score this weekend. Like 5.5. Will the over-under this weekend total for these games, can they get over 5 runs? Eloy's back. Maybe
I might take the over, barely. Barely.
I might take 5. I might take right at 5.
So you're going to go over 6. What about my over of 10?
I would go under.
Under 10?
If the number
over
is 6, 10,
over 10?
If the number is 10, I'm going under. If the number is 6, I'm probably going over. I think they probably will score 7 runs.
Wait, 10 runs? You saying 10 runs this weekend for the Sox?
In 3 games. No.
3?
I think that gets the most action, and that's the goal, right? The goal is to get the most. I'm sure the tickets purchase would be on the under, but maybe the money would be on the over.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to seeing these games. I'm being honest with you. I mean, the Garrett Crochet one, but just bad timing right now because I'm going to be watching Bulls.
That's a tough question.
What's the craziest draft rumor you've heard about the Bears in the last week?
It is silly season. You're hearing a lot of speculation, not so much around the Bears as much as the teams in front of the Bears. The Patriots chatter has been fascinating. The Vikings moving up and trying to put themselves in a position to get a quarterback has been fascinating and fun. As far as the Bears go, I think the wildest rumor or the craziest draft rumor might be that they would package next year's first-round draft pick with a collection of picks or a swap of picks and to move up to 6 to draft Joe Alt or to wherever they need to go to draft a left tackle. Because of the left tackles in this draft, because of guys that I think make it a deep draft. Talk to Mark Schlereth on the Take the North podcast. We'll hear some of what Stink had to say later about this draft. I think that would might be a little crazy for the Bears' taste, a little bit more of an overspend than you need to, even though I would respect Joe Alt's presence in Chicago and think he would be great on that offensive line. But to me, Marvin Harrison Jr. is the best player in this draft, and if you went up to five, as we have talked about, to get him, that might sound crazy to some people, but it might not. It might be genius to others. So the craziest draft rumor I heard was to move up three spots, give up the draft capital it would take, and to draft a left tackle.
Yeah, I don't like that idea at all, even though I do like Joe Alt because he's a Notre Dame guy. But you can sell me on going up to five if we got quarterback, 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 one through four. Mm-hmm. You can sell me on going up to five to get Marvin Harrison Jr. And then the combination that Marvin Harrison Jr. only visited two teams, and one of those teams was the Bears, that he supposedly wants to get matched up with Caleb Williams. That you can sell me on. That I am all on board with. I think it's crazy. Don't think it's going to happen. But to answer this question, that's the craziest thing. The Bulls moving up to four or five to get Marvin Harrison Jr. Maserati Mav.
All right, the craziest one I heard right away, we talked about it too, I think, a few weeks ago, was staying on Maserati Marv is the fact that he could fall down to nine.
That is the craziest.
That's
you're right.
The one I heard.
Okay, that's
and the fact that we heard, and we do have audio of this somewhere, I can find it, that there's been talks that Marvin Harrison Jr. wants to be a Bear. He wants to fall. That's why he didn't do none of the workouts and none. He wants teams to sour him and slip so he can fall to the Bears.
What's the basis of that, you think? Because of the relationship with DJ Moore? Because they're both were they track teammates at one point?
Yeah, it was track teammates. Yeah.
DJ Moore talked about that. Do you think that's part of it? Do you think it's because of the Chicago market? Caleb Williams?
I think it's a mixture of all of those things. And
I love that.
Sauce Gardner talk about tweeted out like, look at the Bears. Like, how did they get two top 10 picks? Like, and then they got like somebody's getting fleeced.
People are talking about the Bears, and it's not as a punchline. That's awesome.
And that's the thing that you love all about it. So that's the craziest one I heard.
Yeah, these are questions we really don't know the answers to right now.
That is the voice of Dan Pompey. He's got a really interesting pre-draft piece in The Athletic talking about tiers of quarterbacks. And this is a draft that is quarterback crazy. The NFL looking for young quarterbacks. A week from today, we'll be describing the first round of the NFL draft and projecting the Bears with Caleb Williams. And since it's such a foregone conclusion, the four-letter network's Lewis Riddick wondered aloud Thursday whether the Bears made up their mind a little bit too fast on Caleb and suggested they didn't do their homework on the others. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I really have a lot of respect for Lewis Riddick. I think he's outstanding at what he does and talks to a lot of people. I also think that if this is the rhetoric surrounding the Bears, I'm not sure it's entirely fair. I don't think it's that accurate, and I think it might be the kind of thing you say or that fills the space between the now and the beginning of the draft. There's a lot of time before the draft. We know because we've been talking about this since the end of the Bears season, which ended in January. There's a lot of rhetoric. The draft season is a season unto itself. There's the combine. There's the pro day. There's the visits. There's all the speculation. And so I think right now what you see is in that void where there's not really anything happening except for conversation and speculation, you get theories like this. I don't think that if you found your guy, you can stop looking. If you're convicted that, if you feel with conviction that Caleb Williams is the quarterback that's going to change your future, you do your due diligence, and if it's already been performed, you don't look busy just to look busy. You're not inviting three guys to play putt-putt golf at Hallis Hall just because you can say you did. Like, that sounds crazy to me if you're the Washington Commanders. But I don't think that as the Bears get ready to draft Caleb Williams, anybody should feel like they haven't done their homework. They've done their homework.
But have they had another quarterback in for one of these 30 visits?
I don't think so.
And so that's what I find interesting, that they have. Now, I don't like what the Commanders did. They did this thing where they brought in, what, three or four of the guys together, right? I got a ton of respect for Lewis Riddick. Another guy who I've got a ton of respect for is Herman Edwards. Now, Herman Edwards recruited Jaden Daniels, mm-hmm. had Jaden Daniels at ASU
yep.
before he ended up going to LSU. Something about the S. But Herm Edwards said that Jaden Daniels would be his guy at number one if he were running the Bears.
That's like a father talking about his kid, of course.
Well, okay, but I'm just, I mean, I guess my point to, the reason there's some legitimacy to what was said by Lewis Riddick is the fact that only one quarterback came in for that extra special visit. So, like, did they not like how he putted or he didn't throw the darts well? Do we even know, did they talk to him at the combine? Like, do we know that? Other than, like, in passing, did he have one of those, you know, whiteboard meetings, the speed dating, if you will, down in Indy?
They went to J.J. McCarthy's pro day.
Okay, but they split up
yeah.
the LSU day.
Okay.
Like, everybody didn't go to LSU.
You're not going
to
take them. You might sign him as a free agent down
so
the road.
So you're done. They're not. We're going back to that. Justin, where you said you made a declaration.
Said,
there is no talk of trading the number one pick. Caden Williams is the number one pick. Moving
you
on.
You know.
I mean, to play devil's advocate on it, I feel maybe so. They a little bit too fast. I'm fine with them saying Caleb's our guy, but I do to piggyback on what Dustin's saying. They didn't. All their, like, reps wasn't there for McCarthy or Daniels or May. They didn't go to no special nightclub or have a nice little dinner somewhere with these other ones. So, I mean, I get it. That's their guy. And, I mean, even go back before that. I mean, they traded Justin Fields, and we had talk about it before they even knew about Caleb Williams, like, having his own workout before he met really with the Bears fully, their own private workout. So, I mean, they could have just already made their minds up. We know we're getting Caleb Williams. This is our guy. We don't have to look at the other ones because this is the one. So I can see that on the other side.
Yeah, no, it's a great question.
All right, here we go. Mark Lazarus of The Athletic asked this question on Twitter. Do you want the Blackhawks to bring back Patrick Kane? He is, by the way, a free agent this summer. How would you answer, yes or no?
It's a good question. It's relevant because it's something that a lot of fans are wondering about because Patrick Kane is a free agent. He went to Detroit, and I think he acquitted himself quite well. I mean, he got the shootout goal. The Red Wings finished in dramatic fashion. They came back, and then they were still eliminated from the playoffs because the Capitals won. But Patrick Kane still has something left in the tank. Clearly he does. Now, Kyle Davidson, in fairness, has not shown any indication that he has any interest in this question. And he might click on the Athletic website or Laz's Twitter account and say no, because no, he just isn't interested. Even though Laz now, this morning, update, they've had 1,881 votes, 70% of people asked say yes. I love the idea. I think you could figure it out. I think there are worse ideas. I don't like the necessarily, it's a pipe dream to say, well, Taves is coming back, Kane is coming back, and they're going to run it back. No, you have your specific needs. And right now, the Hawks need to score some goals. This guy can help you do that. He's a reminder. He's a remnant of the past. If he can find a two-year deal, I say, why not? But I'm also, full disclosure, Patrick Kane, to me, is the most exciting Chicago sports athlete I have covered. He's my favorite one, so take that for what it's worth. Yes, I vote and click yes.
Well, I would vote and click yes as well. A couple other things that the Blackhawks would need to find out. Number one, does Patrick Kane want to be a Blackhawk again? He'll always be a Blackhawk. When you put your name on three Stanley Cups, you'll always be a Blackhawk. But does he want to do that again? Is he looking to put his name on the cup again? And does he want to do that? You know, does he want to go home? Does he want to be a Buffalo Sabre? But, you know, the next, you know, the fourth of never is when they're going to win a Stanley Cup. So that's not happening.
Can the Hawks win a cup in the next 3 years? Yes.
Does he want to be a mentor for Connor Bedard? Yes. Is that something that he looks forward to doing?
Did you see his face on the scoreboard during Chelios' ceremony?
I watched it.
He was like wistful.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if he really wants to.
Oh, hey, Molly.
Hi, David. How you been? It makes you wonder if he really wants to be the secondary star to Bedard. That's all. I'm not saying he couldn't play that role. I'm not saying there's not a lot of hockey left there. He is two teams removed. I don't know. I don't know if they want him because they kind of moved on. Should they want him? Absolutely. Do they need more firepower? Yes. But is that the guy that kind of, I don't know what the term would be. Is that the guy that would take you to the next level in your development? I think he'd be great here, and I think people would love him. But I also think it's Bedard's team to a certain extent. And it's a different role. It's a secondary, less starring role than you once had in the same town. And I just wonder if people want to do things like that.
I think he would. I think he has. The Rangers, he was not the guy. And certainly in Detroit, he took a back seat because he was injured, and then he emerged as a threat in the clutch. But
as long as he's good with that, I think it would work fine.
It is. It'd be fun. I think it'd be a fun departure. All right, that is the pick six. We've got a good extra point question. We will make our predictions about the weekend in Miami and maybe even in Boston. Mullen Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mullen Haw on 670 The Score.
Okay, prediction time. What will happen tonight in Miami with the Bulls Heat game, and what will we be discussing on Monday morning? A season that ended in Miami or the aftermath of Game 1 against the Celtics?
Well, we talked about how wary the Bulls need to be despite not having Jimmy Butler in the lineup for the Heat and Duncan Robinson and Rozier. And so they are wounded, but beware the wounded animal, and I think that's the lesson tonight. The Bulls have to come in there with laser focus and continue to play as well. This won't be the Hawks with the Ole defense and go right past them. And this will be a different brand of intensity, a different type of defense. The Bulls have to be ready. I think they will be. I think they will be. I think they're going to take another step. They will play into the playoffs. They will beat the Heat tonight. It'll be a close game. They will take nothing for granted. They have won games against good opponents, and tonight is a very respected good opponent. But they're just different without Jimmy Butler. That just goes without saying, especially in the postseason. Playoff Jimmy, not available. Bulls take advantage. When we come in here Monday morning, we will be talking about a little bit about how the Bulls survived the Heat, beat the Heat, if you will, down in South Florida, and then how they were tired and listless and were blown out by the Celtics in Game 1. But, hey, they get two more home games out of a playoff series, so we'll be looking forward to that because that crowd, as we saw the other night at the United Center, special group of people, special fan base, and they get two more opportunities after a victory tonight.
Bulls win. Bulls win. Bulls win. We'll be playing that highlight
back.
Let's dance. Dancing in Miami. Salsa-ing in South Beach, if you will.
I'm getting out the dancing shoes.
There he is, Chuck Swirsky. You'll hear Chuck and Bill later on tonight, the only local broadcast of this game right here on The Score, 5:45 pregame tip right at 6 o'clock. And then we'll be asking whether or not the Bulls can avoid getting swept by the Celtics. And Casey Johnson likely to be on with you guys in the 7 o'clock hour on Monday.
I love your confidence, both of you. I love that you are now believing that this is mapped out in front of the Bulls. The problem I'm having is that it is the Bulls, and they are virtually impossible to detect anything from. I think they might be as likely to beat Boston as the Miami Heat. I just think we've seen them win good games and then fall flat on their face, and we've seen them play poorly against bad opponents, and we've seen them beat a couple good teams. I don't know what to make of the Heat. The Bulls split with them during the regular season, and then the most recent one, a lot of those games were early in the most recent one I think it came down to a shot or two. I think the Bulls win by like 2 points. I think it comes down to the end, and I do think they win the game. And that's just because Jimmy's not there to take the shot, and DeMar DeRozan's there to take the shot for the Bulls. But, you know, thousands of different variations of that game are going on. The very fact that people value home court to the point where they think even losing Jimmy has the Heat okay and able to get through this. The Heat are a strange organization, and they have done very well for themselves. I hope that we are in here talking about the idea that the Bulls have more games to play in the NBA season. I don't think there's any way they're going to do well against the Boston Celtics. I think that more likely than not, they lose every game by 15 to 18 points, 25 points, than that they're competitive in any of the games. But, you know, where there's life, there's hope. I think it'd be fun to just see their season extend, even if it it ends up extending into kind of oblivion. I'm very pumped up to have another home game in Chicago, and I think that the crowd will be responding to it, and then they'll all have to leave early. But it was fun to see them in the play-in game against Atlanta. I don't think things are going to go as smoothly in Miami, but I think they ultimately will win by a couple points.
Miami's going to try to grind it out. They'll try to probably make this into one of those typical Heat victories. And it's a testament to them and that Heat culture that they always talk about, that we're giving them this kind of a chance. And even I'm just trying to check right now, are they still favored in this game? I think without Jimmy Butler,
a point and a half.
I don't know if that's a because of the lack of faith in the Bulls and they're being so prone to inconsistency, or a tip of the cap and respect for the Heat because they tend to win games that they shouldn't, and they do more with less.
I think both those are a possibility, but I think this is. Is, you know, with all due respect to the Heat, I think this is more a nod to the way they played last year, players outside Jimmy, as much as Jimmy, as it is to anything else. I think they played pretty well last year. I think that the Bulls are just too difficult to figure out. And I think going on the road after a game a couple nights later, I think it's amazing that Caruso is still a kind of a game-time decision. I saw that Woj tweeted out yesterday, later on in the day, that
reduced
that
swelling.
Yeah, it looks reduced. Good. And that makes me feel like he's going to play.
He's going to play. I would be surprised at this point if he doesn't. If they're getting that out there,
yes.
He's a tough guy. He didn't have an, I don't think, the MRI. It's not an MCL like Jimmy Butler's.
Yes.
And Caruso
Jimmy,
will be right.
Jimmy is definitely out. There's going to be no hero appearance, so that's good to know.
Yeah.
But is Kobe, you know, and I don't mean this as a disrespect, but a year ago, Zach LaVine had the big game and the Bulls won, and then they went into the second game and we kept thinking that Zach was going to repeat performance, and instead it was all DeMar DeRozan. Will that happen again? In terms of, will Kobe White be playing the Zach LaVine kind of have the great game and then temper it down, and you're, it's whether DeMar can carry it.
Well, I think the fact that the Heat will probably have a plan, a better plan to stop or to slow Kobe White than they probably can with DeMar DeRozan, who will be guarded by a rookie, probably tells you that it will follow a similar path. I would be surprised. You know, DeRozan is going to be the focal point of the offense, I think, tonight, and Kobe White will get his if they let him, and I don't think they're going to let him get as many open looks. The Hawks were terrible defensively.
They were terrible.
Will have better recognition, and they'll know to run to the shooter, and they'll know to challenge the shots. And it won't be as easy to attack the rim against the Heat as it was against the Hawks. So, you know, Kobe had 42. If he has 25 tonight, that'll be 17 fewer. I can do the math. But it will also mean he could still have a 25-point game and the Bulls win.
I think if he has 25, they'll win.
I think if he has 25 points, they can win. Yeah. And I wouldn't be shocked if he does. So 25 from Kobe White, 25 from DeMar DeRozan. Now we're talking. And so you get, you know, role players contributing in other ways. Vooch will get his double-double. And I think the Bulls advance because they'll get some balanced scoring. And the Heat just don't have enough offensive options, barring something like Tyler Harrell getting hot and these kind of things that you always see.
I like to lean a lot on onomatopoeia when I talk basketball, and I want you to tell me, is it going to be swish or clank?
I think
it could be one or the other. I wouldn't be stunned by either.
I think more likely to be swish.
Then if they're swishing shots.
More swish.
Then that is a beautiful sign.
Swish.
That's right.
Swish.
Clank. Clank.
Heat are 13-9 without Jimmy Butler, so they are not to be taken lightly. I don't think anybody will, but that's what makes me wary and why I've been wondering if the Bulls can match the level of intensity they had at home in that environment, take it on the road, compartmentalize, and realize that you are playing for your season tonight and what that means. If you lose, you go home. If you win, you want a trip to Boston.
312-644-6767. That's the number. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio. 6-7 The Score.
And Jamison Tyon on schedule for tomorrow?
Yep. Jamison, you know, should be, you know, barring anything, you know, going on over the next 24 hours.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio. 6-7 The Score. Jamison Tyon is back. Would have started that game, of course. It was rained out, so you move that to today.
Tomorrow is today, and I think Jamison Tyon has a lot of anticipation surrounding the start, and he can be the guy that they expected him to be from day one this year. Got off to a slow start in 2023, and the Cubs need him to be a top of the rotation starter. They have aspirations. They have good ambition. It's all justified, but it does help if you have a guy like Jamison Tyon fulfilling expectations the way that he's capable.
I would agree with that. I mean, again, the idea is you must learn to love him because he is under contract and he is making some money and he's not going anywhere. He's going to be given every opportunity. So even if he doesn't have a great start, don't overreact to it. You got to have confidence in that whatever they saw in him to give him his contract is going to come from them. So that's good.
Yep. And the rest of the weekend will fall into place, and we'll see what they have in store for Ben Brown. You know, the biggest start of the weekend isn't today, even though Jamison Tyon's making his debut for the season. It's Sunday when Kyle Hendricks takes the mound to see what he has to offer back in a familiar environment, given another shot. You wonder what the Cubs' patience level is and how long they can wait for him to kind of get into rhythm, because what he's doing now, it's not sustainable.
Let's get to Chris. Chris is downstate. Hi, Chris.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Enjoy your show. Driving to work, even though by the time I get there, many times it's got me irritated. So anyway, I appreciate you taking my call, but it's a couple of comments I had. One is, I really think we don't owe Hendricks anything. You know, this thing, he's 2016. Yes, he was a part of the World Championship, but he's paid him millions of dollars. He's got two more starts, DSA him if he doesn't get the job done.
I understand the idea. I would say, though, what you have to keep in mind is you try not to make decisions until you are forced to make final decisions like that, right? The idea being, let's see what happens. Let's see where they're at. It's a long year. You don't rush into decisions that are final in terms of the result of them. And if you DFA a guy, you're allowing him to go wherever you want. You know, as much as crazy as it is to say that Wisniewski pitched the best game of the year and your response is to send him back to the minor leagues. Well, you can do that. You have that option. So you're not forced to make a final decision on a guy as opposed to just continuing a guy's development. It may seem harsh and it may seem like a tough decision. I think it's actually a fairly easy decision.
DFA is an option down the road. It's a couple steps away. I think before you get to that point, you would likely invent a phantom injury. Even though that's dangerous in Major League Baseball, people have been penalized for that, but I think you would do that to give Kyle Hendricks a chance to reset and restart. You would then maybe bring him back, or even before that, maybe give him a bullpen audition or role, a reduced role somewhere where he can lessen the damage of him on the mound. Maybe he can rediscover something in a four-inning mop-up duty. That could be possible. That's conceivable. I don't think you just want to cut bait in April on somebody who could potentially still help you win this season. It seems far-fetched to expect that given what Kyle Hendricks has been in his first few starts, but they're going to remind us it's a long season and they're going to play the long game with Kyle Hendricks.
312-644-6767. Jeff is listening on the Odyssey app. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, guys. I think the Bulls' best chance of winning tonight is transition and running, because Miami with Spoltra and Riley-esque game wants you to play half court so they can get you on defense. And if we play half court, that usually leads to bogging down to DeMar taking most of the shots. So I think they need to run, get transition threes when they're available, and I think that's how they win. And as for Kaner, I think if he comes back, I don't think he cares if he's playing second fiddle, because when he went to New York and then he went to Detroit,
right,
he was second fiddle there, but he liked playing with Panarin, and then he was going back to DeBrinket. Now, if he thinks he's got the chemistry with Connor, which I think he probably would, because I think Connor's kind of like DeBrinket in the shot, I think he would come back, and I don't think he'd care about playing second fiddle. I'll hang up and listen.
I don't think that would be an issue with Patrick Kane at this stage of his career. If he came back to Chicago, it would be a sentimental journey, and there would be a lot of that pulling him back. I think he's actually living, or maybe has a house in Lake in the northern suburbs, I believe, and there's a lot to bring him back, and a lot of things from his perspective that it would make sense. That's really not the issue. The issue would be from the Blackhawk perspective. Does Kyle Davidson want to bring back a remnant of the past, a symbol of those years, somebody who's maybe in the room and you don't want him in the room? You might like him on the ice, but not that he's a trouble or that kind of a thing, but you do want to, as Kyle Davidson explained the first time around, let this core develop their own identity, their own leadership qualities and traits, and that's easier to do when you're not staring at somebody who's the best player in franchise history. So I love the idea. I think they could get it done, but I just don't know if it's really very realistic based on what we have heard from the general manager for the Blackhawks.
Yeah, I would love to see the Blackhawks take a step a little bit this year, both with some of the young players coming up and, you know, getting more talent that can play with them through the free agent market. I don't think there's anything wrong with kind of changing your trajectory a little bit. And I understand they thought they'd get some veteran guys and they'd be able to move them at the deadline, and that didn't work out. Go ahead and do that sort of thing if you want. How far away are they? Did we say 2 more years before they're able to compete in the playoffs, 3 more years before they're able to compete in the playoffs? Okay. I don't mind that timeline. I think that getting to watch Bedard will keep everyone happy. But if you want to move it up a little bit, if you want to quicken that pace, feel free. That sounds like a good idea. I'm all over that too. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.